by the hundreds. And they'll come at 2 or 3 in the morning. They'll sleep on the road, and they'll build campfires all along. They come to be first in line to hear the gospel message preached. But also, once they hear the message, they're entitled to choose 2 or 3 items of secondhand goods that have been donated to the mission.
There are no jobs in the area. In this rural setting, you almost have to move out of the area to get a job, or you travel for a few hours in the morning and a few hours in the evening and spend half or more of your day's wage on travel.
Rivers were at flood stage, and someone had been bitten by a black mamba. And at first I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And then Sharice and I chatted, and she encouraged me to give it a try, which is unlike her. So I crossed the rivers at very deep levels.
Hello, and welcome to the In Touch Mission International Podcast, where you get to hear directly from ITMI partners. I'm your host, Summer Kelly. In today's episode, I'm sitting down with Kelly and Sharice Smith. The Smiths live and minister in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, among the Zulu tribe. One thing I love about ITMI is that there's such a wide range of personalities and strengths and experiential knowledge that our partners have, and I hope in this interview the gentle, thoughtful kindness of Kelly and Sharice shines through, and you can get a small sense of how profoundly they've been able to be a blessing to their community, and how their supporters' sacrifice to send them there with the good news has yielded growth and depth in God's people in KwaZulu-Natal. Let's jump right into my interview with Kelly and Sharice. Well, Kelly and Sharice, it's wonderful to have you here. Welcome to the ITMI podcast. We are so excited to hear from you. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'd like to just start by having you describe for our listeners briefly what your ministry is and what you're doing in South Africa.
We started 14 years ago, and it's in a rural area in the southern, it's called the South Coast. We're in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, and we live in a remote area, and we're surrounded by 3 Zulu villages. We do community development in the area. And that involves home-based care through training we received with Medical Ambassadors International. It's called CHE, Community Health Evangelism. And this is something we've been doing all along. Currently, a big focus in the ministry is our church plant, our Zulu church plant. It's called Entabeni. And we have a Zulu pastor and his wife. His name's Ayanda Kakaza. And they're doing great. They live with us on the property. So we also have a team of co-workers that help us in the various ministries. Our daughter Fifi is involved with some sports outreach and some skills training. Through the church, we're doing midweek services and just a whole host of different outreaches throughout the year to the church.
We've also been able to do some different types of outreach in the local schools. These vary depending on the time of year or the year itself. But we've been invited to teach English or to teach Bible and to be a part of a year-end ministry called Project Christmas Blessing, where we are able to share the gospel, which is obviously the main focus of that. We also raise funds for gifts for the children, which are a toy or two, toiletries and school stationery, and we pay for a really nice meal. Something very big and special, something that they would eat if they were celebrating something fun. And it's been a ministry we've had going since a year into arriving in the area.
And how many years are we going on now?
So this upcoming December will be number 14.
Wow.
Oh, PCB.
Yeah, Project Christmas Blessing. In the early years, that was our main event where we could have the gospel message shared in the Zulu language. Now, because of the church and the various ministry partners, it's able to happen on a weekly, twice weekly, but it used to be that that was a really, really big event. We'd have gospel preachers or singers come in, and it was very festive.
So does that mean you've been in South Africa 15 years or yeah, also 14?
This is our 14th, okay. And this PCB in December will be number 14.
That's really exciting, and it sounds like you have so many opportunities to really reach into your community there.
Yes, it's, you know, it's interesting because we've been there for so long, we can observe what's going on at the time, and because we know community members, God opens different types of ministry that you can't just do if you come in for the weekend and you're trying to do something fun and exciting. Because we know where the community is at a different time and their beliefs and what they're hoping for, we've been able to do different types of ministries over the years.
So what is your daily life like in the 14th year that you've been there?
Well, living on the farm has its... We live on a farm, a 100-acre farm, which is where a lot of the ministry takes place, or... A lot also takes place in the community, but we have land available for different ministry. We have some income-generating business. It's not quite business yet, but it's ideas. And so just living on the farm takes some type of survival.
Yeah.
And well, lots of time.
We were talking about this earlier, how much energy and effort it takes just to live there.
I bet.
Because it's remote, we need four-wheel drive vehicles to get in and out on a rough road. We drive through rivers. the property is called Seven Rivers Farm. When the rivers are high, we're stuck either in or out. So it takes a lot just to be there. Sheree's mentioned the income-generating activities. We've got macadamia nut trees planted on the farm. Our last, we didn't mention this, our as far as an outreach goes, it's our Bible verse shop, and people come, we'll announce it through sending out SMS text messages, and people will come by the hundreds, and they'll come at 2 or 3 in the morning. They'll sleep on the road, and they'll build campfires all along. They come to be first in line to hear the gospel message preached, but also once they hear the message, they're entitled to choose 2 or 3 items of secondhand goods that have been donated to the mission. After they receive the gospel message, they take 2 or 3 items that they've chosen. Then, without our knowledge, they would go and help themselves to the macadamia nuts.
Oh, no.
So we had a decent crop this year, and the orchard was cleaned out.
I did not know you had a line to, like, 2 miles long at 2 a.m. in the morning. That's crazy.
We have people coming from other communities now where they'll start hiking to come.
Wow.
Yeah, word spreads.
And are you the one preaching the gospel there, or is that your pastor?
Well, we try to have it done in Zulu. But what often happens is that we'll tag team. So he'll take a session, and because it's about a 30-minute session, and then he'll do the morning, and then I'll do the afternoon. So we'll each have 4 sessions each. Because we have a small building that can only seat so many.
So 36 people. It seats 36 people or 72 little kids. Squash them together. Yeah. But it literally takes about 8 or 9 sessions through the day to get everyone through.
Okay.
But we also have been, you know, given new clothing sometimes, household items, and food. So because we like to see physical needs met, but it's not, we don't want to see that done without the gospel being shared. And this way people actually get to pick what, out of what's available, what they personally feel that they need.
Hmm. And you get to meet two needs at a time, a physical and a spiritual. That's awesome. Exactly.
And I think a big part of our ministry is maintaining the relationships that we've developed over the years, because we've noticed with the Zulu community that we're in, it's only over time that they trust you and that they really start to consider what you've been saying all the years. Mm-hmm. So we try and keep up those relationships, and that takes time, you know, giving time and effort into being a friend and caring for people. Obviously, the different types of ministries we do take preparation ahead of time. And so we're always considering what's coming up next and how we can do it to the best of our ability. Our hope and desire is that the gospel would be shared in Zulu as often as possible there. So we're really flexible to what's the next thing to do and what's best. But all these ministries we've talked about happen regularly throughout the year.
On a daily basis, our schedules have to be flexible because often we'll have a knock at the door and someone will have been bitten by a snake, or someone will be, you know, attacked by someone else, or there's constant crises. And often, because of several reasons, one of them being that usually we're the only ones with a car in the village. So one Christmas Eve, we got a knock late night. Someone had gone into labor. And
Christmas baby.
Yeah, get to the hospital, yes. So, could you please help us?
I've had other times where the rivers were at flood stage and someone had been bitten by a black mamba. And at first I said, I'm sorry, I can't help you. And then Charisse and I chatted and she encouraged me to give it a try, which is unlike her. So I crossed the rivers at very deep levels. By God's grace, we were able to make it through. The lady arrived at the hospital and got the treatment she needed, and she survived. Oh. And so did our vehicle.
Yeah, that's good. We have to consider our vehicles very often.
So at the risk of sounding really dumb, because I've promoted Project Christmas Blessing for, you know, many years, do they celebrate Christmas where you're at?
Very differently here in the U.S. I was always very interested in inquisitive and curious at how they celebrate. Food is huge. A meal is very important. Also, because it's a break from school, one of their only breaks, they will buy a new, not a set or a pair, but a new outfit, some new clothes. And that's a big deal, getting new clothes. Also, once you have food, you are to travel to neighbors and have a little bite at each neighbor's house and visit. Gifts aren't a thing, would you say?
No, I think they like to follow certain Western cultures, and so gifts are coming in for different things, like they're now making a big deal of birthdays where they never used to, and trying to give a gift here and there. But Christmas time for them is not a gift-giving time, and it's most definitely not a celebrating the birth of Christ time. It's, this is the time that we have a great meal together, we buy clothes, and we visit.
So Father Christmas or Santa Claus isn't known in the Zulu culture, in our area.
And it might just be for now, because it's very interesting how they're slowly but surely picking and choosing things to make life more fun and exciting, and at the same time, spending money they don't have to even eat a meal in a day that they need, but they want to keep up with certain trends that they see.
You mentioned they have, you'll send it out with text, so there's cell coverage and things, even though it's a rule.
And if I send it out, and I probably send 140 texts, and then that then gets relayed to others. Fortunately, that way everybody knows. So we're grateful for that, because otherwise, who knows how you'd gather 400 people.
Yeah, you have to ride a horse through the village.
To look at weather, you have to look at the items we have. So it can't be consistent. We can say we'd like to host this once a month, but it may be pouring with rain. So they wait until the Sunday before the Thursday that we host it to hear whether or not we're hosting it.
So what are some other things about everyday life for the people around you in your area?
So our people, because we're rural, we have no running water. Definitely no running water in the homes. There's no flushing toilets. So daily life for the communities around us are survival. You would cook with fire. So you'll have to go and you'd have to chop wood. A lot of times with it's the women who chop with the wood. They'll chop trees, they'll fall the trees, and then they have to let them dry. So it's a bit of a process. They use machetes, and then what they'll do is they'll get a bundle of wood. It's usually 6 to 8 feet long, and they'll either use strips of material, fabric, as what they'll use to tie it together in a bundle. But a lot of ladies will take grass and they'll weave themselves a rope.
Wow.
On the spot and tie up the bundle of wood and put it on their head, and then they'll hike back to the village. A lot of the homes have electricity, but it's too expensive to cook with because they're living in a family as a clan, and they just, when there's a pot of something, it's usually cast iron over a fire, and they feed it with the wood that they've harvested. So to cook the way that they're used to in big cast iron pots in large quantities just doesn't work on electric. So
yeah,
they'll have a container, which is usually 25 liters, and it'll have a cap. And so they'll fill it up, and it's amazing how heavy it is. Well, 25 liters is 25 kgs, which is roughly 50 pounds.
Okay.
They'll put it on their head, and they'll hike. And it's not flat.
Mm-hmm.
Our area is very hilly, and so they hike. And so they're amazingly strong. Again, this is all women.
Wow.
Girls.
It sounds like some amazing women.
The girls have to carry water on their heads from a young age, or else their neck muscles won't develop. If you come in and just try to carry water on your head, you'll damage.
Huh.
So you've got to carry from a young age and increase in weight to do what they do, or else you'll have neck problems. Another thing, so they cook with wood. The water is often not available, which is unfortunate. The municipality has provided water taps here and there, and they're out as often as they are working. So we have a river, and the river's not clean, but they'll fill up there. We like to think that they boil it, but they don't always boil it. And the kids will drink it, they'll bathe in it, they'll cook with it. So dysentery is a thing still, and we're trying to increase our efforts in getting clean water to the villages. Yeah. It's just hit and miss. The municipality will also provide a water truck to come in when the water taps aren't working to deliver water once a week. And we find out that the water truck's filling up the river.
It's only saving the distance that you walk, not getting any clean water.
So their lives, again, are each day spent with what do I need to do today to live today.
And, you know, they struggle with lack of energy. The kids will often have sores on their heads, because the food, if they have food, it's not nutritious. It's the staples that are cheap, and they do struggle with being healthy in general. There are some rural schools for them to attend, but you'll find that they're kids who don't have anyone at the house where they live who encourages them to go to school. So if their parents are gone or deceased, and maybe they live with a next door neighbor and nobody's encouraging them, then they won't go to school.
So it's not like legally enforced that the children have to be in school?
It's funny, in South Africa, the areas that are urban and are they have laws that are countrywide that are enforced, but in the rural areas, it seems like a whole nother way of life. To try and enforce laws is difficult. Difficult to say the least. I mean, even when we have crime and theft, we don't go to the police. We first have to go to the chief. He tells us what we can do, and he'll give us the green light whether we should go to the police or not, or whether it can be taken care of in-house.
Yeah, it's a very interesting mix of first and third world situations in the rural village.
Yeah, that sounds complex.
Yes, very. And we've tried very hard to understand how things work, still being doing things right, but to honor and respect
the local system
while it is still, you know, some while it is still doing things correctly.
Mm-hmm. So one of the outreaches that we haven't talked about yet is Fifi's bead shop. So I want to have you guys tell me about that.
Well, the bead shop started as a ministry idea. It's kind of happened every few years where young girls in high school end up becoming pregnant and have to leave school. They don't have any role models of how to then care for these children they have. And they're not quite sure what to do. As it is, they don't have food at home. There are no jobs in the area. In this rural setting, you almost have to move out of the area to get a job, or you travel for a few hours in the morning and a few hours in the evening and spend half or more of your day's wage on travel. So we were praying about how do we help these women in some way, these young ladies. And we had learned about this bead that grows along the river, just naturally. It's called the Tswabasi. And women pick these, dry them, and then they take them to the big city and sell them at these tourist shops. And they were growing right there on the farm and on the local river that we drive through. So we tried to figure out making just some pretty simple necklaces, simple and pretty, that we could then teach to the ladies. So we didn't mention that part of what we do is different types of skills training, but so this was a skills training idea. Using those beads to create something that we could then have available for people to purchase. The idea, of course, is firstly the young ladies have somewhere to come. The whole purpose, of course, is sharing the gospel. So the first thing they do is gather around Fifi, our daughter, prays with them. She gives a teaching from the Bible, or the pastor's wife will do that. They sing, and then they spend the day creating these necklaces, which then provides them with an income that they walk 2 kilometers. It's a distance, but they can walk. They're not paying to travel somewhere. So when they get their wage, they get the whole wage. And through this, we're seeking in the Word of God how to be a mother or how to be a child of God. And although they haven't all come to give their lives to Christ yet, they are learning to be responsible, or at least being exposed to that idea that they're not seeing in the home they grew up in, or literally in the whole community, there's almost not a single biblical representation of a godly family within the Zulu culture. So this ministry just has so many opportunities and aspects that we are excited about. And the women loved coming and getting together and spending time just chatting. They love to chat. They love to visit. They love to pray. They're a spiritual people, the Zulu people. They strive to know God. They just don't know how to know God.
So about how many women or girls come on a regular basis?
Zulu life tends to be very, you can have a whole bunch of women coming at one point, and then on a different given day, one lady shows up. So it really varies throughout the year, but we've had up to 15 come at different times. You know, you always want to encourage them to be consistent. It seems like there's a lot to say about being consistent, even for themselves, for the finances they need, for the teaching they're receiving, but it just is not a Zulu thing. You know?
And another thing is that there's not a lot of pre-thought or planning. So if they know that Thursday is bead shop, they won't go fetch wood and water on Wednesday to make sure they're available. It'll just be that, oh no, we're out of wood, we're out of water, it's bead shop day, I still have to go get wood and water.
Yes.
There's not that thought process.
Interesting. So what kind of feedback do you or does Fifi or any of your team get from those young ladies about coming or being part of that?
We have one of the young ladies who's very handy with weaving and making crafts. And she was able to learn to make this. And it's a pattern that they make. But I remember her just kind of being quite proud of learning how to make this, saying, well, look what I can do.
Yeah, and they're very grateful that they they, at their age, have the opportunity to come and earn an income. You know, it's not consistent. It's not 5 days a week every week, just because of our ministry load. And, you know, when you do something like this, it has so many facets. Main point is to share the gospel and to help disciple. But you want a quality product at the end of the day. And they may not be at the place to provide a full quality product. So we have to do quality control. And so, you know, maybe one day God will send someone who can be that part of that ministry. Fifi is fantastic at relating to the ladies. She's Zulu. She speaks the language. She knows where they're coming from. You know, she isn't. When I listen to stories, I can't even picture what it must feel like to be in that situation. I just know that God knows and He loves and wants to see something different for them. But Fifi knows. Fifi grew up in that same situation, so she has real empathy for the ladies. And is able to speak into their lives in a way that we aren't able to. So we feel privileged to equip Fifi and other nationals who then can do so much more with what they've learned from the Word of God in the community.
And I actually have gotten to receive one of those necklaces, which was amazing, and I love to wear it. So the necklaces, and I think last year we brought back garlands, and those were beautiful. And I just want to say the necklaces, they make great gifts, and garlands, they make a beautiful Christmas decoration. You can clip Christmas cards and drape them around your Christmas tree. But for those of you in Arizona, Kent will be at the First Baptist Church Christmas Boutique selling necklaces and garlands from this bead shop, from Kelly and Teresa's Riverbank, and handmade by this group of women. And if you aren't in Arizona, but you want to support this ministry by purchasing one of these beautiful beaded creations as a gift or for yourself, you could reach out to the ITMI office and you'd be getting a beautiful gift and helping young women provide for their families and really giving Fifi's bead shop some success, which could extend her impact into the community as more and more women would want to participate. So that's a really cool upcoming opportunity with the Smiths and their ministry. Well, that's it for part one of this interview with Kelly and Charisse. In part two, they get more into the challenges of their ministry and what they think the next season of ministry might hold. They talk about how they celebrate Thanksgiving now and how they did in the past. And Kelly corrects a misunderstanding I had about the actual physical setup of a typical Zulu home in their community. So be sure to stay tuned for that one. There's two things I want to make sure you can find if you're interested. Kelly and Charisse mentioned their project Christmas Blessing Outreach, and that's a great opportunity to bless Zulu children, give them an opportunity to hear the good news, and bolster the Smiths' influence in the community. It ends up costing them around $20 per child, and you can find out more information and participate in that by going to intouchmission.org/PCB. That's intouchmission.org/PCB for Project Christmas Blessing. Also, if you're in the Phoenix area, don't forget to visit our booth at the First Baptist Church of Tempe Christmas Boutique. Either Friday, November 1st in the evening, they'll be open 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., or Saturday, November 2nd from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., and snag a beautiful handmade necklace, bracelet, or beaded garland, and support Fifi's bead shop. We'll also have some handmade purse bags from the ministry of our partners, David and Taru Kumar, in Bangalore, India. If you go on Saturday, they're going to have a car show raising funds for women and children in need, so there'll be something for everyone. Again, that'll be November 1st and 2nd at First Baptist Church of Tempe. That's located at McClintock and the US 60, and the address there is 4525 South McClintock Drive in Tempe. I'm Summer Kelly, and I'll catch you back here soon.